You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Community Connection SmartCast Microlearning Podcast Series hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Dr. Sylvia Hanna, and I'll be the host of today's podcast. In this episode, we will review a case presentation of a patient with non-melanoma skin carcinoma. Joining me today is Dr. Vishal A. Patel, Director of Cutaneous Oncology at George Washington Cancer Center, attending physician at the Department of Dermatology at Washington, D.C. VA Medical Center, and Associate Professor of Dermatology and Hematology Oncology at George Washington University School of Medicine and Health Sciences. Welcome, Dr. Patel. It is so good to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Hanna. It's a pleasure to be here today.
So, Dr. Patel, let's start with a case of metastatic basal cell carcinoma.
Absolutely. Now, as many of our listeners may know, basal cell carcinoma is rarely metastatic. It is highly uncommon to have a presentation of metastatic basal cell carcinoma. But when we do, some of these cases can be quite challenging because they are so uncommon. Let me tell you about a patient of ours from the VA. Now, this is a gentleman in his seventh decade of life with a history of several non-melanoma skin cancers, including basal cell carcinoma on the left posterior shoulder. This lesion was initially treated with destructive therapy or electrodesiccation and curettage approximately 3 years ago. The lesion recurred a few years later, and he subsequently underwent an excision of the tumor. That wide local excision had positive surgical margins, and after discussion with the patient for re-excision, the patient opted to have observation of the area as clinically there was no sign of tumor present. He unfortunately then presented a year later after that with shoulder pain. It was believed to be musculoskeletal in origin as his dermatologic clinical exam was unrevealing. And an MRI was ordered and performed to identify the musculoskeletal cause, and it did not reveal any abnormalities. However, the pain progressed over the next 9 months with pain radiating down his left arm. At this point, a repeat MRI demonstrated a tumor that had grown and was beginning to press upon the brachial plexus. An FNA biopsy was ordered and done and revealed the mass to be metastatic basal cell carcinoma. He underwent a multidisciplinary evaluation by surgical oncology, but due to the extensive involvement of the tumor around the brachial plexus, it was deemed to be unlikely to be able to be resected without significant functional loss of the left arm. A challenging case for all of us, as you can imagine.
Dr. Patel, what approach did you recommend in the management of this patient?
Well, Dr. Hanna, as I noted, patients like this undergo a multidisciplinary evaluation. And this patient was no different. After seeing our colleagues in surgical oncology, as well as myself in dermatologic oncology, the patient was also evaluated by medical oncologists and radiation oncologists to consider all of the treatment options for advanced basal cell carcinoma. As I noted earlier, it's uncommon to have distant metastases, but when those do occur, we have to consider more atypical treatment options than we generally consider for the large locally advanced tumors that oftentimes we see right in front of our eyes. In this case, for this patient, given the size of the tumor and its proximity to the brachial plexus, surgery had already been deemed as not an option. It was not amenable to both the surgeon as well as the patient. The risks were too high. Radiation oncology also evaluated the potential to treat the tumor, but given the location and concerns for potential nerve damage, the patient wanted to consider systemic therapy. We discussed with this patient the first-line treatment approaches of advanced or metastatic basal carcinoma. Now, like many of the solid organ tumors that we see, especially in skin cancers, basal carcinoma has a targetable mutation. The sonic hedgehog pathway is one of the most common mutations in basal carcinoma. This mutation leads to a downstream signaling cascade that causes basal cell carcinomas to proliferate. By targeting the pathway, specifically targeting the smoothing inhibitor of this pathway, we can deactivate the carcinogenesis cascade. Therefore, the patched or sonic hedgehog mutations often found within these tumors can effectively be blocked. There are two potential treatments for smoothing inhibitors that are FDA approved, vismodegib and sonitegib. Vismodegib is a hedgehog pathway inhibitor that is approved for both locally advanced as well as metastatic basal cell carcinomas. This is what we considered in this patient. And after discussing the pivotal trials, we explained to the patient that in clinical trials, a once daily oral dosing led to a response rate of between 30 and 43%, depending on which cohort of patients, metastatic or locally advanced, you were looking at. Given this patient's metastatic presentation, we discussed that we would anticipate a response of around 30%. Sonitegib is another smoothing inhibitor. However, it is only approved in the U.S. for locally advanced basal cell carcinomas that have recurred following surgery or those who are not candidates for surgery or radiation. It has a similar once-daily dosing profile, and its overall response rates were notably slightly higher in the locally advanced cohort, close to above 56%. These are the two first-line systemic therapy options that we consider in patients with locally advanced tumors, and as I noted, in a metastatic setting, only vismodegib is approved in the U.S. Therefore, we discussed with this patient that a systemic therapy with a smooth inhibitor, vismodegib in this case, would make the most sense. Now, the patient asked us between the two medications, which one would potentially work better. And again, we rediscussed with the patient that metastatic basal cell carcinomas only have an approval with vismodegib. However, in comparison, in the locally advanced basal cell carcinoma cohort, there has not been direct head-to-head trial evaluation. Only there's been one meta-analysis looking at the literature and comparing the overall response rates as well as side effects of vismodegib and sonitegib. But it's difficult to compare apples and oranges as the clinical trials as well as the patients included within these studies are quite different. So while this meta-analysis has shown that there might be a slight favorability to vismodegib, I caution providers to know that we are not really comparing the same patients as well as the same outcome measures to make that type of conclusion. As a whole, these are both approved medications with a similar pathway and used more or less interchangeably. The side effects is what makes utilization of these medications most difficult, and when we discuss this with this patient, we outlined what those most common side effects are. The effectiveness is not in question, but the tolerability often becomes so. Almost all patients have one of the major side effects, which can be debilitating muscle pain or cramping, loss of taste that can lead to major weight loss, or hair loss that's quite extensive and across the whole body. I tell patients that around 3 months we evaluate for these side effects because generally most patients would begin to develop them at this point. Much has been looked into how we can minimize these side effects, and while there have been limited trials looking at alternative dosing regimens, many providers do change from the daily dosing regimen to drug holidays or dosing regimens that are less frequent than daily to help mitigate the side effects. Yet the impact on efficacy is unknown, and such modifications are often, while they are often needed for treatment, we have unclear data to really guide us to know what's the best path forward for patients to tolerate this. And as a result, it can be very difficult to stay on these treatments for a long period of time.
Dr. Patel, after discussing all of this and the options to the patient, what treatment option was chosen?
The patient was pushing towards a systemic therapy option as his most preferred treatment after the initial discussion. The major reason for this was that surgery and radiation were not palatable to the patient, and he preferred to try a systemic therapy option. The first-line treatment in a metastatic setting, as we discussed earlier, is vismodegib, which is what the patient was started on. And initially, he did well. In fact, after a number of months, PET CT and follow-up MRI revealed that the tumor was not growing, but in fact had shrunk a little bit in size, but was still having ongoing FDG avidity. Given the decrease in size of the tumor, there was a discussion that we could potentially add radiation therapy at this time point, given that the nerves were no longer directly abutting the tumor. The patient was amenable to adding this to increase the response, and he underwent radiation therapy. And follow-up again revealed ongoing reduction of the tumor size with decrease in the FDG avidity. After approximately 1 year, the patient noted that he was beginning to have not only side effects, but also new onset pain and numbness. His surveillance screening scan at this point revealed that the tumor had begun to increase in size and the avidity on the PET scan had returned, both because of the combination of the growth as well as the side effects. We had to further discuss what our treatment approach would be at this point.
And with the patient, what did you decide to do?
Well, given the tumor had begun to grow, and since the tumor is a metastatic basal cell carcinoma, he essentially had exhausted the first-line treatments, of which we only have one. We, however, are now lucky that there is an immunotherapy option for basal cell carcinoma. In 2021, cemiplimab, an anti-PD-1 blocking antibody, was approved as the first immunotherapy for locally advanced and metastatic basal cell carcinoma patients who have been previously treated with a hedgehog inhibitor or for whom a hedgehog inhibitor has been deemed to be not appropriate. Now, this medication was approved based on a pivotal trial that showed an overall response rate of nearly 30% in locally advanced patients and over 20% in metastatic basal cell carcinoma patients. So this second line therapy can be helpful in patients who either cannot tolerate hedgehog inhibitors or may have disease progression. What's important to note is that this class of medication, PD-1 inhibitors, has been studied extensively in melanoma and squamous cell carcinoma. And it's nice to see that in this pivotal trial, there were no new adverse events noted within basal cell carcinoma patients. The safety signal is fairly well known and generally fairly well tolerated. However, approximately 10% of patients have notable side effects that leads to discontinuation.
Dr. Patel, what treatment option was selected for this patient at this point?
Given that he had failed the first-line treatment with vismodegib, we turned to the now-approved immunotherapy, cemiplimab. He was transitioned and started on cemiplimab anti-PD-1 therapy, and he tolerated it well for approximately 12 months. He was noted to have a partial response. The tumor decreased in size to a stable point, and it was no longer FDG avid. And we discussed that we'd continue potentially for another 12 months or so, reassessing both for his response as well as side effects. The patient was transitioned to anti-PD-1 therapy with cemiplimab, which, as we discussed, is now approved in the second line setting for patients who have failed a hedgehog inhibitor. He tolerated the therapy well for approximately 12 months, and his response was a partial response. The tumor began to shrink in size and then was stable and was no longer FDG avid. He did well on that therapy without significant side effects, and I was happy with his response.
Dr. Patel, is combination therapy an option in this setting?
That's a great question. It would make logical sense that if immunotherapy is approved and works, as well as hedgehog inhibitor therapy, maybe we potentially could combine the two. We unfortunately don't have a lot of data to support utilizing that approach. There's been one study that's been published that has shown the combination of a different PD-1 inhibitor, pembrolizumab, compared with the combination of vismodegib versus some patients who only received monotherapy pembrolizumab. And there was not a significant increase. Notably, there was actually a decreased response rate in the combined group. Now, this was a very small study and was just an exploratory study. And so there needs to be a lot more work figuring out whether a combination or a sequencing approach may be beneficial. There's been other data showing that there might in fact be. But for now, the treatment approach is to consider hedgehog inhibitor therapy in the first line setting. And in those patients who do not tolerate it, cannot be started on it, or have tumor progression, then move to the approved cemiplimab therapy in the second line setting. Now, it's also important to note that pembrolizumab, while not having a direct approval for basal cell carcinoma, does have a tumor agnostic approval for tumors with a high mutational burden. Basal cell carcinoma, as well as all skin cancers, have high tumor mutational burdens. And so pembrolizumab can be considered once you have shown with biopsy and tumor sequencing that it would fit within that approval set.
Dr. Patel, how did the patient do and what is the plan to move forward? The
patient did well, and he had tolerated approximately a year of therapy with a stable tumor mass that was no longer FDG avid on PET scan. We discussed treating for another 12 months, which is the typical maximum timeline that we now consider up to 24 months if we have stable disease, or given the stable disease and overall good response rates. Or at this time point, you can consider active surveillance to see if the tumor returns in size or if the patient continues to have that stable response. Since the patient did well and felt well, he actually selected active surveillance, and he's been off therapy now with no evidence of progression for almost 2 years following his last dose of immunotherapy. It's really remarkable to see how, well, 5 to 10 years ago, we really would have limited treatment options in patients with metastatic basal cell carcinoma as well as squamous cell carcinoma. And now we have a treatment option that really has changed the journey for many of our most difficult patients to treat.
Dr. Patel, that is a wonderful outcome for this patient. And it is hopeful for other patients that wouldn't have had these treatment options years ago. So thank you so much for this discussion. We learned a lot today. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Regeneron Pharmaceuticals, who provided an unrestricted grant for this educational activity.